I'm Faith Mitchell, President and CEO of Grantmakers in Health. It's my pleasure to present this podcast of Nick Tilson's plenary remarks at our 2015 Annual Conference on Health Philanthropy. Mr. Tilson, who is Executive Director of the Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation, shares the story of the Lakota people and their evolution, and describes his work empowering Lakota youth and families to improve their health, culture, and environment through the healing and strengthening of cultural identity. Here's his speech, Planning a Healthy and Sustainable Community.
Hamadakyape, Nick Tilson Amachape, Chantewashtenape Chuzapalo. My name is Nick Tilson, and I greet you this morning in my Lakota language. Good morning to each and every one of you. I'm the executive director of the Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation, a citizen of the Oglala Lakota Nation, and most importantly, a father of four children. So I'm definitely contributing to the growth rate in American Indian populations. The story that I want to share today is the story of our community, but it's also the evolution that American Indian communities have went through. And in order for us to understand why Indian country is the way it is today and the challenges that we have today, we have to really acknowledge history. We have to acknowledge what this country was built upon and the impacts that that has had on Indian people. And it wasn't that long ago, as indigenous peoples of this territory, that we did have a sustainable lifestyle, that we had a sustainable economy in which health, economy, jobs, roles, responsibility, and culture were not separate from one another. And for me and for my people, it meant this nomadic lifestyle that we had of living on the plains. Buffalo provided our food. It provided our shelter. It provided our lifeways. Our culture was interrelated with those things. It provided our housing. As a result of that lifestyle, our food and our health as a people was a lot stronger. It's important that we understand that that wasn't actually that long ago. This was in the 1700s, 1800s, in which we were actively living this lifestyle. Leadership was huge. We talk about governance today, about leadership today. Living in those conditions in the plains in the 1600s, 1700s, and 1800s, it took leadership because it wasn't easy. It was extremely challenging. It was extremely hard. But we had strong leadership and strong governance structures that helped us not only exceed and excel as a people, but create new innovative ideas that derived from that culture and derived from our cultural beliefs as indigenous people. As time went on, there became a clashing of different ideologies. As indigenous people, as Lakota people, we believed that we didn't own things. We didn't own the land. We didn't own the resources or the assets there, that we were stewards of it. And we were just as much part of it as the land itself. When America was growing and becoming the richest country in the world, it ran into ideological differences. Indigenous peoples believed that we were stewards of this land, and I guess America and Western civilization was built on the idea that everything is an asset. And that led to conflict. That led to the Indian Wars. How the West was won or how the West was stolen, depending on how you look at it. And it led into these conflicts. But to understand that the conflicts had to do with ideological differences of how we look at systems. Resources. Looking at resources. In America, there was 60 million buffalo. After the massacre at Wounded Knee in 1890, there was only a couple hundred thousand buffalo left. And the plight of the food source and the economy of indigenous peoples was directly related to the plight of indigenous people. Through the process of losing our food source and losing our land and losing our culture, we came to a point where we were at a crossroads as a nation and as a people. And we became sort of the problem of the United States government. And after the West was won in the early 1900s, then came the Industrial Revolution. And just to think about this, that during the Industrial Revolution in America, this was the period of time in which America became the richest country in the world. What was happening to Indian people during that time? What was happening to Indian people at the time that Detroit was being built and Cleveland was being built and the Industrial Revolution was happening? Indian people were starving in the plains. Indian people had their nomadic way of lifestyle stripped away from them. And so as you think about sort of the progressive years in America, what you didn't see, what was happening to Indian people. It's important to understand, too, that after the Indian Wars, after the land was conquered, was stolen, and our people were colonized, all we had left as a people was our identity, was our very identity of who we are. And there was a series of policies that were created to create an assault specifically on that, too. And it was the idea to assimilate the American Indian, to assimilate us into society. What that meant in the realm of policies was they made it illegal for us to speak our language. They made it illegal for us to practice our ceremonies. They made us cut our hair. They washed our mouth out with soap. They literally tried to beat the Indian out of us. And this is just the harsh reality. During that period of time, there's a lot of stories of how our ways continued. In some of the boarding schools, they wouldn't allow you to speak your language. So my grandpas and grandmas, they would get their lunches. And those who were brave enough, they would hide over the hill. So they'd all joke and talk in their language. And they used to say, the number one reason we don't like English is you can't joke like you can in Lakota. And so a lot of their stories, they would sit around and tell these stories. Also, the ceremonies that were outlawed, those ceremonies were done in hiding. So there was ways that during these harshest times was to protect these things. The other thing to understand is when the boarding school era came in, it separated children from their families. Indian people, indigenous people, have multi-generations living in one household. All of a sudden, you take children out of that, take them to a boarding school. They don't come back till they're 18, if they come back at all. And the breakdown of the familial structure of our people had detrimental impacts on our emotional health, continues to this day. The other important thing is that after that period of time, about the 60s and the 70s, which was my parents' generation, which means I'm about 32, of the movements that grew out of the 60s and 70s, the American Indian Movement was one of those movements. And it started as a civil rights type of movement to get equal place at the table. But quickly, Indian people realized they had an entire different relationship with the federal government. They had an entire different relationship because we were sovereign nations. We were nations of people. We weren't just another ethnic race in America. We were entire nations within America. And my parents' generation made stands. And this was an important thing because boarding schools were successful in making a lot of Indian people not proud to be Indian. This generation, by the stances that they made, changed that. And they built the very foundation of what we're doing today and how I'm able to do the work that I do in my communities today. Today, modern day, Pine Ridge Indian Reservation is located in western South Dakota. I always put this slide up there, especially for the people on the East Coast and West Coast who think that they're the only places in America. Pine Ridge is a huge reservation. There's about 40,000 people there. It's about the size of Delaware. It's about 2.7 million acres divided into 9 political districts. And we have huge opportunities, but huge challenges there. Over 50% of the population is under the age of 18. There's a huge housing shortage that exists there. Average 2 to 3 bedroom house on Pine Ridge has between 15 to 17 people living in there. It's not just because we like each other. It's a real problem. A huge amount of the homes in our reservation lack plumbing, basic services, access to roads. Life expectancy on Pine Ridge is some of the lowest life expectancy in the Western Hemisphere, with the exception of Haiti. And this is right here in the middle of America. Probably the thing that astonishes me the most, and probably the thing that hits to my heart the most in this work, is the suicide rates in Indian communities are about 150% higher than the U.S. average per capita. And when you compare these statistics to one another, that young people are half of all of Indian people, half of all people on Pine Ridge, and that population is experiencing this amount of stress and suicide living in these conditions, this is epidemic proportions of problems. Because of that, and because of the work that our parents' generation did, my generation, the 30-somethings and under, was the first generation in a few generations that got to grow up living in the ceremonies without them having to be in hiding. It's important to understand that. My parents got the rights back to have our ceremonies. But me, I got to grow up doing ceremonies my whole life, and they weren't in hiding. We didn't have the complex of, are we proud to be Indian or not? It was just what we knew. When I was a kid and I'm sitting in those ceremonies, there was probably two or three young people throughout the reservation who knew our songs, who knew our language. And in the past 20 years, there's been a cultural and spiritual movement on Pine Ridge of young people reconnecting back to their culture, their spirituality, their identity, and the healing of our actual spirit that some felt was broken. And through the Sundance and through the Uwipi ceremony, through the Sweat Lodge ceremonies, we became reconnected to who we were. Those weren't nonprofits that did that. Those were lifeways, indigenous lifeways that we did that. Out of that movement is what grew the organization that we are today. So before Thunder Valley CDC was a nonprofit, it's a spiritual circle on Pine Ridge, a loose-fit spiritual circle on Pine Ridge, connecting young people to ceremony and us just doing it. And through that, we became empowered. Through that, we grew a sense of responsibility. And in our spiritual way of life, we have interpreters. We have medicine men, medicine women. And they have the ability to communicate to ancestors that were here before. And ancestors that were here before posed a question to us young people that inspired the work that we're doing today. I remember the day well. We were sitting outside of a sweat lodge. There was probably 20, 25 young people. All of us were in our early 20s then. And we were complaining about the way the res is. Why does everybody else have it better than us? I went to this other reservation. I went to this other community. They had housing. They had jobs there. I just got back from Minneapolis, and they had all these opportunities over there. How come our community has to be the worse off? And we went into that sweat lodge. The sweat lodge is a purification ceremony. And the ancestors came in there, and they posed a question to us. And the question that they posed to us was this: how long are you going to let other people decide the future for your children? Are you not warriors? And they said, it's time to stop talking and start doing. And they said, don't come from a place of fear. Come from a place of hope. Now's the time to do this. And that was sort of the marching orders. Literally, that's what led to the creation of us saying, okay, we're going to take responsibility for what's happening in our community. And as I talk, think about how relevant that is to each and every one of us, though. That message, even though it was in the spring of 2006, a bunch of tattooed up young people on Pine Ridge sitting around a fire, how relevant that message is to everybody facing the most important issues of humanity today. And that's what led to the creation of Thunder Valley CDC. And through a process, we created this mission statement of empowering Lakota youth and families to improve the health, culture, and environment of our communities through the healing and strengthening of cultural identity. And no matter what we were going to do, whether it be improving the health of our communities, creating economic development, creating jobs, we were not going to be able to do that unless we healed the human spirit of what happened to us as a people. Again, there's a message that's way deeper beyond Pine Ridge in there. In the beginning of the organization, we were a bunch of young people who were promised a lot of things that never happened. That's what we grew out of. Those statistics, that was us. And we wanted to be doers. And so when we first created the organization, in the first year, we said we need a place to have ceremonies, gatherings, meetings, if we're going to build this movement and this organization. And so we literally built this Thunder Valley Community House. Really, really simple building, but it meant the world to us and continues to mean the world to us because we did it with our own hands. Nobody asked us to. Hardly anybody gave us resources to even do it. We just did it because it was important. And when we talked to our elders about this, sort of about this movement of that for a long time, we prayed for change. We wanted to move from this place of praying for change to the place of taking action and taking responsibility. And our elders told us that in our language, we would call that igloo tokcha, and which means that life and everything in life is constantly evolving and changing, but you're making an active intervention in how that happens. It's like casting a stone into a pond and the ripple effects of change that would come out there from them. It's the closest way to talk about transformation in our language. We also recognized that how do we talk about what we're doing? Is it sustainability work that we're doing? Or is it regenerating? Is it regenerating the community? And so the regeneration is not just about the environment or the systems. It also comes back to that human spirit, this idea that our lands, our economies, and our life ways and our spirits were damaged and were lost, and that this work is a return to healing those things. And in the beginning, we wanted to go to the community. We recognized that our biggest assets as a community was us. And this is a message for the philanthropic community in here too, is that the innovators of change are the people impacted by it. Hands down, no matter what community that you're going to. And so we recognized that we need to go to our own community. These were the things that were most important to the people on Pine Ridge. And we also realized that what ends up happening when you start something in a community that doesn't have resources, everybody sits in these meetings and says, what are you going to do about this? What are you going to do about this? And that didn't make sense. And they're like, we, what, who? It's we. What are we going to do about it? Unkie in our language is we, together. That together, that we're better. In our work, even though we came out of a grassroots movement of young people reconnecting to culture, spirituality, and identity, our big vision was, how do we create healthy communities that can change our reservation, that we want to raise our kids in, and that can raise new leaders? And how come there's no development happening here? Pine Ridge is the poorest place in America. It's ground zero for poverty in America. And so we had this bold vision, and the idea was, let's create our own community from scratch, defined in our culture, who we are today, committed to healing and committed to sustainability. And let's do it for the sole purpose of trying to create a model so that it's repeatable. And we recognized early on that development doesn't happen on Pine Ridge. Development doesn't happen in these communities because there's a lack of the legal, political, financial infrastructure that creates the physical infrastructure for development to happen. Those systems are entirely lacking in these communities. And so by doing a development, it's not the goal. It's just part of a strategy of a bigger goal. The development itself is to knock down these barriers that have been closed on our people and to create new entire systems of housing and financing of jobs and healthy communities. And so these were the main objectives that we set forth when we wanted to build this community. It was about producing 100% of our energy needs that were needed here, ways to infuse culture and language into community, creating a supportive environment for youth and families, building the capacity of our own people to lead this work, looking at food sovereignty and sustainable housing, and always having a continuous commitment to healing and action. And through this process, we planned and designed a community. We weren't architects, engineers, planners, all those different things. We were just grassroots community people. But we brought together all these experts to help us realize our vision. And it's manifested itself into this 34-acre planned development on Pine Ridge. And this development has a return to culture, has a return to building communities. On Pine Ridge, there has never been a planned community on Pine Ridge. In fact, most people on Pine Ridge, up until this project was started, were never, ever asked, what kind of housing do you want for your community? What kind of jobs that you want for your community? When we had community engagement sessions, I had an elder that was 92 years old come up to me and say, that was the best meeting I ever went to. And I asked her, I said, why is that? She said, because nobody ever asked me those things my entire life. Stuff had been prescribed to this place since forever. And so in this master plan, this was the idea that came out of the community, that we were going to build a mixed-use, mixed-income development that had a fitness center, that had parks to play with their kids, to plan out what communities look like for us. We were going to produce 100% of our energy created for this development. We were going to look at new education systems, and that we were going to do this incrementally. The exciting thing about being here today is that after years of planning, community engagement sessions, meetings, trying to force the government to help us fund this thing, that in the summer and fall of 2015, we're going to break ground on this development. And we purposely are starting with home ownership. And the reason why we're starting with home ownership is not just simply because we want to put homes over families, but the realization that if you're going to create change, you got to create champions for change. And a way to create champions is to build up people that are already invested into this, stakeholders into the community. And so home ownership is one of the avenues that we're creating those stakeholders. It's not the easiest avenue. In fact, it's the hardest way to get the development started, financially and otherwise, but it's the most meaningful because you can have families that are invested in there, that want to be in there, that want to make this community beautiful and powerful. One of the things that was really important, especially to the investors and bankers, was this is a really good idea, Nick, but there's 80% poverty on Pine Ridge. Good idea. You write an article about it, put it in your back pocket. And we started looking at what opportunities existed in our community. Because no matter which community you're in, whether it be Pine Ridge or Brooklyn or Detroit or Oakland, even though there's challenges in those communities, there is equity and opportunity. And when we looked at the statistics on Pine Ridge, yes, there was 80% unemployment. And yes, there was around 5,000 jobs. But you also looked at half of our existing workforce doesn't live on our reservation. And there's not one house for sale either. There's not one rental property for sale. And so our arrival at looking at housing and building this community wasn't just because we simply wanted to build houses. It's part of a regional economic development strategy to build thriving communities. And I think it's important, no matter which sector that you're working in, to be committed to this idea of looking at the equity and opportunity that exists in your community. One of the last things I want to talk about a little bit is what we call the feedback loop. This whole commitment to process, that we're so afraid of doing the wrong thing that we don't fully commit to a process. And what we recognized really early on in our work on Pine Ridge is that the things that work and the things that don't work are equally valuable. If we're going to create a national and international model, what works and doesn't work is extremely important. And so being committed to the process and making it better. And this feedback loop represents this idea that we continue to refine what we're doing over and over to make it better each time, and that we're willing to take risks in that. And I guess my message to philanthropy about that is, as practitioners and community-based organizations, we take huge amount of risks. Come along with us. Take some of those risks. Step out of your comfort zone and do that. Or at least for part of your portfolios. And so I think the other thing to understand is that we have to be committed to a bigger vision. We have to be committed to something much bigger than ourselves that's beyond our organizations. And in communities like Pine Ridge, we have to be fully engaged into capacity building. If I come back to you 10 years from now and say, we built this community, but we didn't build the capacity of our own people to lead it, then we failed. And so Thunder Valley is fully engaged into this process, from everything from education to training, of teaching our own people how to do this work, how to lead this work. And it's definitely not the shortest way to build houses. It's not the shortest way to build communities, but it is the best way, because we build the capacity of our own people, and you make leaders out of that process. People end up believing fully into what we're about, because they did it. They did it with their own hands. And I think this is really, really important when it comes to the health, happiness of our communities, and looking at the ways that improves confidence and builds people's individual capacity, because they can really believe and touch and feel something because they did it themselves. The last thing, for the second time, I think I said that was the last thing, is to really look at everything truly from the triple bottom line: people, planet, prosperity. Whether you're looking at enterprises, you're looking at job creation, you're looking at homes, how do you do something that creates healthy homes, healthy communities? By looking at all three of these things. Our ancestors did it, so this is a return to us doing it in the modern sense. To look at life cycles, how everything has an interrelationship with one another. In our language, we say madakuyase. That means we are all related, and all the systems are related. And this kind of brings me to the end of the presentation, that the reality of the work that we're doing on Pine Ridge, it's not just about Pine Ridge. It's not just about indigenous communities. It's not just about rural communities. When we're living in a society that if everybody lived how the majority of us live in this room, it would take six planets to support life on Earth. The reality is that this is a human problem. And so the work that we're doing on Pine Ridge and the work that we're doing in Indian Country is about how do we solve this bigger issue facing humanity. And by having a clean slate on Pine Ridge, by having an opportunity to do the work that we're doing at ground zero for poverty in America, the innovation that's coming out of there, I think, has the ability to affect communities around the world. And for us to understand that whatever we do, whether it be in the world of philanthropy or as practitioners, that essentially what we have to do is we have to meet the needs of our present generation without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. It's common sense. It's not that complicated. And we have to stop living in silos. Philanthropy has to stop living in silos. Practitioners have to stop living in silos. And the policies have to stop living in silos too, because those silos have perpetuated poverty in these communities. And it's important that we look at solving the problem, taking giant leaps into solving the problem and having the courage to do so. The thing that inspires me the most is that over 50% of the population on Pine Ridge is young people. And every single one of those young people is a leader that we can mold, that we can change, that we can build as leaders. And so all this work is about building the next generation of Indian leaders and building the next generation of leaders for society to solve these problems collectively.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast. For more information about Grantmakers in Health, visit us online at gih.org.